Louisiana Eats is brought to you with support from Zatarain's, maker of New Orleans pantry staples like Creole mustard, fish fry, and jambalaya mix since 1889. Recipes and more at Zatarain's.com. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Is a career in food the right choice for you? On this week's Louisiana Eats, we're exploring culinary careers from all angles. We'll begin by meeting members of the New Orleans Culinary and Hospitality Institute's first graduating class, along with their instructor, Chef Allison Vines Rushing. Noki, as it's known, offers a fast track into restaurant kitchens, awarding a professional degree in just 100 days. Then, we'll explore food science careers with Professor Daryl Holliday at the University of Holy Cross. And finally, we'll see food science in action when we learn about an amazing new discovery, a molecule known as Reb-M that's about to revolutionize the sweetener world under the trade name Amaris. We're exploring the complex and delicious world of food careers on this week's Louisiana Eats. At a time when nationally, vocational schools are shutting their doors, educational food programs are opening and expanding in New Orleans, making it an ideal place to launch a career in the culinary arts. One of the newest schools offering a world-class education here in town is the New Orleans Culinary and Hospitality Institute, or NOCI. With curricula designed by the Culinary Institute of America, NOCI aims to be an affordable fast track into the industry. In a mere 100 days, students receive certification in culinary or pastry, with tuition averaging under $15,000. Hailing from across the country and ranging in ages from 18 to 50, Noki's first class of 19 students got their diplomas in June 2019. We invited two members of the graduating class into our studio to talk about their experience, Trinique Brown and Grant Higginbotham. Also joining us was their culinary arts instructor, Allison Vines Rushing. Allison spoke first to give us a more in-depth look at the program.
NOCI is a state-of-the-art culinary facility in downtown New Orleans. We've got two culinary labs, two baking and pastry labs, a beverage lab, and also a lab for like a pop-up restaurant that we do every quarter. It's a 100-day program. It's 5 months, super fast. The students come Monday to Friday, 7 hours a day for instruction. We have the same amount of lab hours that a two-year culinary program usually has, except this is consolidated into 100 days. So it's really kitchen-focused, less about classroom and theory, and really more about cooking and industry training. So if you come at it like from an education background, normally, you know, educators teach an hour here, then take a break, and an hour for a different class or whatever. So this is like all day with each other, nonstop cooking. And the curriculum is intense. I mean, there's a lot of things we have to accomplish in a day.
Allison, how many students altogether were in your first class?
We had 14 students in the culinary program.
Did they all graduate?
They did. Yes. I'm really just amazed at what a wonderful group came together for this first class.
My name is Trinique Brown, and I'm a member of the first class of the New Orleans Culinary and Hospitality Institute. Before NOCI, I worked for the federal government, and I've always loved to cook at home and with my family, so my passion was always in cooking, but professionally, my background is in communications and administrative leadership.
What in the world made you want to go to NOCI? Why did you pick NOCI and have this big life change?
Humongous life change. I picked NOCI. Well, first of all, let's go back to what made me decide to do it. I decided to take my passion seriously. For years, I had fun cooking, but I didn't realize that that brought me more joy than what I did on a day-to-day basis. So I decided to jump in and give it a try, and I resigned from my job. My boss thought I was crazy. I was good at what I did, so she's like, well, why are you quitting? I'm like, I have to give this a try. You never know where it can go if you don't try.
Hi, my name is Grant Higginbotham, and I'm one of the lucky first classmates that have graduated. I'm from Lafayette, Louisiana, where my grandparents have run Mel's Diner. There's two locations in Lafayette, and as a kid, I was surrounded by the culinary industry, but I thought that I would never actually pursue it. I always had other things in mind. I was really into theater and writing and film in high school, and I actually completed my undergrad in Loyola. I graduated and I got another restaurant job at Satsuma Cafe in the Bywater, and it was the first time that I was working at a restaurant where it wasn't just a means to pay bills. I loved going to work every day. I loved the people that I worked with. And while I was just a server, at the same time, my passion for cooking was growing so much. I was cooking at home more than ever. And it kind of all just came to a head, and I realized I don't have a plan with my college background. I majored in English creative writing, and I just thought, why not make this passion that I have into a real skill set and give myself the confidence and the foundation to not only work for the rest of my life, but to explore other creative outlets, and cooking has been that for me, definitely.
So what surprised you all the most about your experience at Noki?
What surprised me the most was just realizing how much I did not know about cooking. A lot of times when you come from a family of people who cook really well, you don't realize how big of a difference it is to be a home cook and be a professional cook. How much information is out there, how many different techniques. I felt like a newborn. In a good way. I loved it.
Definitely how much we did all get along. And I think the experience of being guinea pigs, per se, all of us being the first class at Noki, you know, everyone is learning how everything is going to operate, the staff of the school included. And so we were kind of all in it together. Mm-hmm. And even if it was bumpy at times, we all had such an amazing time. We all got along so well. We all worked together so well. And I think that really pulled us up through any struggles that we had as an institution over the last few months.
You mentioned bumps in the road. I imagine this is a really fast program. So did y'all hit some speed bumps?
Even if I say, like, bumps in the road, they weren't ever issues that made us feel like we couldn't overcome anything. It was just dealing with a brand-new curriculum that, you know, we weren't familiar with. A lot of us had completely different backgrounds in the culinary industry. Some of us had worked in restaurants, some of us hadn't. And so it was kind of just a five-month-long dance of figuring out everyone's footing, learning who was comfortable doing what, and helping each other and motivating one another.
Allison, as the teacher, there must have been some interesting bumps for you because this was all the first time.
So I would say, you know, just with anything new, there's always things that you learn that you might not do again, right? Some of these were really kind of curriculum-based. One in particular that I can think about was the day where it was like emulsification day, right? One of more than one emulsification day. But in this particular day, hollandaise and mayonnaise were the two lessons of the day. And if you think about my role as the chef, I have to taste every student's product. So there were 14 students making hollandaise and mayonnaise, of which I had to taste every one of them. Mm-hmm. So, 28 bites later of hollandaise and mayonnaise, I thought I was going to die. Probably I was green at some point and looked physically really uncomfortable. Well, the students were so helpful and sweet and concerned about me. So they kept making sure I had water to cleanse my palate. You know, they were like, Chef, do you need some water? Chef, do you need some water? They were very on top of that. And but then, I mean, I don't know, it came like to the last bite or so, and I was just like, I don't know if I can do it. I'm not sure if I can take this bite. And which I did, and then I was like, okay, you guys, I'm going to have to walk outside for a minute and, you know, get some fresh air and hopefully not vomit.
Yeah, I got you.
And that's not even to mention the quality of the mayonnaise and the hollandaise from people who maybe have never made it before.
Gosh, I think of it, my skin still crawls a little bit God. Of that day. It was bad.
Tell me if there were, I'd like to know about things that you did that you never thought you'd do. Were there dishes that you accomplished that you were like, wow, I never even knew about that dish, much less thought I could cook it?
The most rewarding and interesting dishes that we would do were actually some of the most simple techniques that have been longstanding in the culinary industry that personally I might have just never had the confidence or interest in doing. I cook pretty like eclectic food, I guess. And so learning to literally just truss a chicken and roast a chicken properly was really rewarding for me. And learning to cook large portions of meat, I suppose. You know, I cook a lot of vegetables, so learning to do that and to do it well was definitely a journey for me.
I agree with everything that Grant said. I think that the meat fabrication portion of our study was my favorite, but also global flavors, because I absolutely love Asian food, and it was really fun to have a space where we got to explore those dishes. I think that gnocchi exceeded my expectations because I learned how to cook the things that I was interested in and a lot more than that. And then I learned a lot about things that I didn't even realize would be a part of the program, like food costing, front of the house. I did not expect that experience.
I didn't really know what to expect going into school. I knew that I wanted to hone my skills and I wanted to secure my confidence in the kitchen because I just wanted so badly to work professionally in the kitchen. And I knew that this experience would provide that. And it certainly did. I feel like we have all grown so much, and gnocchi really blew any apathy I had out of the water. I'm now secure, confident, and passionate about working in the kitchen. And that's all thanks to the school.
Yes.
What more could anybody ask? So what's going to happen next? What are your plans for the future?
Yes, my plans are event catering and ultimately food journalism. I would absolutely love to host my own culinary talk show.
I'm warming up the seat for you,
you
huh?
Are.
And how about you, Grant?
At the moment, my goal is to just get more experience and to continue learning and to grow as a line cook, because I think that just sets you up fundamentally to have confidence in the kitchen. And I would like to do some similar things. I'd like to integrate my literature background and my writing background into my culinary career. I love writing about food. I love food television. And I'm really into event planning. And so I would really like to one day have my own business where I do special dinners and pop-up events and eventually just own my own businesses.
And what about the rest of your chickadees? Where are they flying off to, Allison?
Well, I mean, most of them have jobs in great restaurants around town. I'm super, super thrilled at their placement. Although, I mean, they really had kind of their choice. And I constantly told them, hey, this is, you're holding the reins here. You figure out what you want, where you want to go, what you want to do, you know, and you can get that job. And they have.
Oh, well, such happy endings. I can hardly wait to watch your first fledgling crew and see the big things I know they're going to all do. So thank you so much for sitting down with us in the studio today, and please stay in touch.
Thank you, Poppy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Noki Culinary Arts instructor Allison Vines Rushing and two of the graduates from Noki's first class, Trinique Brown and Grant Higginbotham. Coming up next, we journey across the river from Noki to the University of Holy Cross, where Daryl Holliday tells us about the school's food science program. Louisiana Eats returns after the break. Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Camellia Brand, Beans Done Right, a New Orleans tradition since 1923, and from the Napoleon House, located in the historic French Quarter, dishing up 200 years of history, refreshing Pimm's Cup cocktails, and toasty warm muffuladas. All-day dining and private events at 500 Charter Street.
My name is Daryl Holliday. I'm the director of the Food Science Program at the University of Holy Cross.
On the west bank of the Mississippi River, in the New Orleans neighborhood of Algiers, the University of Holy Cross offers higher educational training for a little-known but booming type of food career. In 2015, the small Marianite College created their food science program, offering a Bachelor of Science degree in food science, food business, and culinology. I met Director Daryl Holliday on the campus of the university to learn more about the program. I began by asking him to explain to me what exactly a food scientist is.
So a food scientist is someone who understands the biology, the chemistry, the physics, and the engineering, and all that's required to get food from the farm to the fork in a safe, healthy, and nutritious manner. So whether it's working for a large company doing consumer packaged goods like you would buy in a retail outlet, the food scientists there are working within the company to make sure that the food is packaged correctly, that the food is safe of adulterants. And we also have food scientists who work with restaurant chains, who work with consumer brands, and they're the ones who help develop the recipes, help develop the food products that you buy at these fast food institutions, at the quick service restaurants, as well as the companies that supply to all the restaurants here in the city. So the food science program fits into the Holy Cross mission of not only educating the mind, but also the heart. And New Orleans is all about feeding, whether it's feeding the person, feeding the soul. And that's really what we're trying to do here at the University of Holy Cross in our food science program. We're really focusing on a hands-on learning approach with a greater emphasis on teaching as opposed to research. So the students really get the opportunity to understand all the aspects of food science, spend a lot of time doing hands-on learning opportunities, so that way when they graduate, they're ready to be employed by the local food industry, whether it's here in the city, here in the state, or across the nation.
Tell me about who your students are. What is their educational background?
So most of our students are local. They are from the greater New Orleans area. We do have students from a few other states as well. And most of our students are coming to us with an associate's degree from a culinary school. And then we're doing a 2+2 or 2+3 program with them, where then we help the additional courses they need to convert their associate's degree in culinary to a bachelor's in culinology, culinary science. Or they're coming to us as first-time freshmen, and they're spending all 4 years here learning food science or food business.
So tell me about the curriculum. How do you learn to become a food scientist? What are the sort of things that you have to go through here?
So all of our students take a large number of courses in biology, in chemistry, and then we take those, you know, we start bringing them into the food science side where those courses start becoming applicable in the food science realm, where they'll take food chemistry. So we take what they've learned in general chemistry and organic chemistry, and now we're applying it specifically to the food supply and the food industry. They take fundamentals of food science, where they'll learn all of the potential areas where food science is applied into the industry. And within that, we start talking about how food science is really the trunk of the tree, and careers in food science are the branches and leaves. So no matter what someone might be interested in, there's an area where in food science that specialization or that area of interest can be applied. There can be food regulatory, which can include just a person who's very interested in the documentation side. And then there's also food regulatory on the legal side. So if someone is interested in law, they can then take that and get a specialization in food law. There's food safety if they're interested in microbiology. There's food for nutrition, whether it's nutrition or research. Medical foods, if they're working for companies that manufacture food specifically for hospitals, retirement homes, ensuring the population is getting the diet they need. There's candy, there's beverages. So really whatever the person might be interested in, there's an avenue for that.
Okay. I'd like you to tell me a bit about the various students you've worked with.
So two of the students who have just graduated, we'll start with them. One student came to us with a bachelor's in nutrition, and she didn't necessarily want to work in hospitals or as a dietitian, but she wanted to be able to use that nutrition degree to really work in the food industry. So she came here and earned a second bachelor's in food science. And while here, she was able to do research with a company, present that research at a national conference, as well as do an internship, which she was eventually hired by that company to work for. So she was working for a company who makes a product called EarthSafe. And what it is, it's an electric static sprayer gun with the idea that it enhances sanitation in hospitals, school education facilities, as well as food service institutions. And so what she showed was that the electrostatic sprayer that they invented and were marketing actually showed an equivalent to a Lysol cleaner, but being less caustic and hazardous, and also sped the time that it was able to sanitize. So their employees were able to sanitize in about 78% less time. So it made the employees more likely to actually go through the full sanitation process because it was much quicker.
And tell us about your other recent graduate.
Sure. So our other recent graduate started at Holy Cross in a different field. She actually came over for health sciences in the Rad Tech program, but decided about halfway through her education that radio technology was not really the appropriate field for her. And she switched to food science. And she's been able to work in two different internships with Blendmark, which is a local spice blender, as well as Zatarain McCormick as interns, where she's gotten a lot of hands-on learning with them and being able to apply what she's learned in the classroom. And then she also worked on a project with Swerve Sweeteners, creating a ready-to-eat high-protein cookie that has a six-week shelf life retail. So it's giving the opportunity for kind of a healthy, sweet indulgent. And she's also looking for opportunities at the moment on where she can have a full-time career.
There's all sorts of flavor tricks that come with this business, you know, things that you may not know if you weren't taught that acid corrects salt, for instance. What are some of the food science things that people come across in their daily lives that maybe they're not aware of or they should give some thought to?
So one of the food science tricks that we use is that salt on the surface of a food item will make the food taste saltier and a little bit more craveable. So if we're doing a potato chip project, we're going to go with a really fine salt powder that will hit your tongue and dissolve instantly and give you that really intense, salty craveability that you're looking for in a potato chip. Whereas if you're doing a tortilla chip, you might go with a larger grain of salt something more like a kosher salt. So as you're eating, you get more of that salty corn flavor together as opposed to just that salt flavor up front. And we see that a lot in other products as well, where we might add juice concentrates and a fruit juice flavor to really boost that fruit note in the product. So you might be made with juice, but might also have a flavor to really give that top note, that really fresh note. So there's things like that that we can do. Very rarely do you see products that are going to be strictly one flavor. We use certain things like vanilla to make things taste a little bit sweeter if we're doing confectionery, so that way we're not always having to add as much sugar. So there's ways that we can use the food science side to benefit nutrition as well as benefit the palate.
A lot of eating, particularly when it's from the food science point of view, it has to do with psychology, doesn't it? Taste, look, various signs that the human body is receiving before they put whatever it is in their mouth. Is there a psychological piece of this that you all address?
Yeah, so there's a whole area of food science called sensory science, and that's using the human as the instrument. And we were actually very fortunate where we have opened a sensory lab here in New Orleans with the New Orleans Culinary and Hospitality Institute, NOCI, here in town. So we're able to do work with companies doing tasting, doing comparative products, as well as educating our students to understand how visually, texturally, they can perceive different products. A great example is with pink lemonade. If you take pink lemonade and yellow lemonade and you put them side by side, 60 to 70% of the population will generally rank pink lemonade as sweeter, even if there's the same amount of sugar, because of that perception.
So we have all of these different options for culinary education here in town. How do you work collaboratively with the other organizations? And tell me how you fit into the overall structure of food education here in New Orleans and in the state.
So we're really fortunate that we are the only food science program in the greater New Orleans market. And so we can work with schools like Delgado, Nunez, Nichols, Noki, and really take their students and take their education that further step. We don't want to be culinary educators. We're letting the culinary educators do what they do best. We want to take those students as well as industry members and be able to provide that additional education to them. So if it's a student that goes to culinary school and decides they want to then move on, we have that opportunity. If it's somebody working in the industry, we offer continuing education courses here at the university. And so we really try to make sure that we're doing an extension side by making sure we're able to provide resources to the local industry using our students and our resources. That way it can help their company grow.
Daryl, what's the most satisfying part of your job here?
The most satisfying for me here at the University of Holy Cross is really seeing the knowledge of these students grow and seeing students that feel like, oh, I'm not a math person or I'm not a science person, and then seeing them when it comes into a practical standpoint where they get all excited that they've learned, they've been successful. And we're looking forward to seeing more of our students graduate, go into industry, and really change the environment of the Louisiana food manufacturing.
That was Daryl Holliday, director of the Food Science Program at the University of Holy Cross in New Orleans. What is the oldest artificial sweetener? We'll reveal the answer to that question when we come right back. Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from St. Tammany Parish Tourist Commission. Located 40 minutes from New Orleans French Quarter, the North Shore's Tammany Taste features the chefs and farmers, brewers and bakers of St. Tammany Parish's culinary scene. Visit LouisianaNorthShore.com to discover more. Louisiana's North Shore, where New Orleans has come to play and get away for more than a century. Additional support for Louisiana Eats comes from Cuba Travel New Orleans, a local travel agency now offering an authentic trip to the acclaimed Havana Jazz Festival in 2020, designed to support the Cuban people through music and arts. Visit CubaNewOrleans.com or call 504-252-9774 to book your trip today. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. What is the oldest artificial sweetener? The ancient Romans reduced grape must in lead pots to make a reduced sugar syrup they called defructum, something that would later become known as sugar of lead. Actually, the leached lead created lead acetate, which, like other lead salts, has a sweet taste. Of course, there was the little problem that lead is poisonous. Pope Clement II was the first confirmed death from sugar of lead, a suspicion confirmed through mid-20th century tests conducted on his remains. Sweetening wine with sugar of lead, a common practice in the early 1800s, is said to have hastened the death of Ludwig van Beethoven. Saccharin is the oldest artificial sweetener on the market today. 300 to 500 times sweeter than sugar, it was invented by accident by Konstantin Fallberg at Johns Hopkins University in 1879. Working with coal tar derivatives, Fallberg concocted the compound benzoic sulfamide, which he later discovered was the sweet taste he noticed on his hands after working in the lab. The problem with saccharin is its bitter aftertaste, an issue that many sugar-free sweeteners share. That's why the pursuit of the perfect sugar substitute continues unabated today. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Amyris is a science and technology company that has single-handedly isolated a rare molecule from the stevia plant that is the foundation for Pure Cane, their new zero-calorie sugar substitute. Now we learn about the molecule known as Reb-M that's about to revolutionize the sweetener world.
My name is Jim Iacopone, and I'm Senior Vice President of Nutrition Ingredients for Amyris.
My name is Orestio Fieschi, and I am the president of Sweetener and Ingredients of Amyris.
Pure Cane is a natural, zero-calorie sweetener made starting from sugar cane, and it is the best-tasting zero-calorie product on the market. And what we really hope to do is help the world transition from a diet full of sugar and calories while keeping sweet that they love, but giving them a much healthier alternative.
Our mission has been bring the best to the planet, the best sustainable in health to the consumer. And I decided to spend my last third of my career, professional career, dedicating myself to something that will make good for my grandkids. So, and Amyris is part of it.
Now, you were telling me there are all sorts of products that you have had your hand in here. Tell me about some of the other things you're working on.
One of the products that is in our pipeline right now is a series of the molecules that are found in mother's milk, and they're called human milk oligosaccharides. Babies, when they're born, depend on their mother and all of the HMOs found in breast milk to help their digestive tract and their immune system develop and become healthy. And in infant formula, those compounds don't exist. And what's missing in the world is a way to make those compounds, those molecules, cheap and accessible. And our technology is going to be able to do that. And what we look to be able to do in the next couple of years is bring to market a product that will make babies around the world healthier, give them access to the great nutrition that they don't have today for moms who can't breastfeed.
What a magical thing that would be for the world. But you all have done a lot of magic in the world already, because this whole business started off with a grant from Bill and Melinda Gates.
Yeah, we started years ago with receiving a grant from Bill Gates and Melissa Gates Foundation to discover a molecule to treat malaria. And we did it. Today, we saved more than 1 million lives of children in Africa that didn't have access to that treatment before. So after that, we decided that our mission is to really make the difference in the planet. Everything we do is sustainable, based on sustainable source. Everything we produce are molecules that can be affordable for most of the population, not only the healthy people.
How do you get to a sweetener from a malaria drug?
What's amazing is that in the world of plants, there is a very common set of structures. And our amazing scientists are able to look at the enzymes in one plant and compare them to those in another plant. And it's the same basic technology. We create a yeast. We feed it natural sugar. We use natural fermentation. And it results in a product that we want. And it's pure, it's sustainable, and it's at a very good competitive cost, and it's better for people, and it's better for the planet.
Now, it has an unusual name. It's going by Reb M right now, correct?
In the stevia plant, there are many different sweet molecules. And they're called steviol glycosides. The very best one, and one of the rarest, is called Reb-M, or Reboticide M. So we've focused on that molecule, Reb-M, because we know it has the best taste, and that's the one that we've chosen to replicate. And we're now making it in very large scale, and it's now available to the market. And we think when customers taste it, they're going to be so in love with that zero-calorie natural sweetness that they're going to say, I need less sugar and I need more Reb-M.
And yet it all comes from one of our favorite products, sugarcane. That's where it all starts.
It all starts with sugar. And the beauty of yeast is it's an organism that we can adapt, but it is very natural, and it starts with the natural, sustainable sugar. Sugarcane is an amazing plant. It is able to take carbon dioxide, sunshine, water, mix them together very naturally and produce this beautiful, beautiful substance that normally we eat and we crave, but is also the basis for fermentation, which is a process that has been around for thousands of years.
A lot of people are reluctant to put something in their bodies that perhaps they can't pronounce it. Perhaps they equate it with a chemical. Would you just explain to us a little further about those elements?
Yeah, clean label is a global trend everywhere. Every country, consumers wants a healthier product. So they don't like to read in the labels names that they cannot pronounce or doesn't make part of their daily lives, right? So clean label is it's a trend. I mean, it's happening everywhere. And part of the process of the clean label is using natural products, really natural. And that's why stevia as a sweetener in general is largely used today. The other options are artificial, right? Mm-hmm. Chemicals. But stevia has this aftertaste, this bitter off notes. And we believe that the market will quickly adopt our molecule because it's natural. It comes from sugarcane, natural. It's produced by via fermentation, which is considered by FDA natural. And our molecule is exactly the same that you find in the stevia leaves. So in, you have no aftertaste at all. It tastes just like sugar. It's like a miracle.
Sugar, as a substance itself, has a lot of applications, and I'm sure that you are going to want pure cane to be accessible to bakers, to other applications besides just a little sweetener. How are you looking to tackle that?
What we specialize in is developing a product. What we rely on partners for is the best way to incorporate those products as an ingredient into some final form. And we are working with people that make ingredients for yogurt, baking companies, chocolate companies. We're working with a wide array of folks that will turn our ingredient into a final product in a way that tastes great, that takes most or all of the sugar out, and that will be better for people at the end of the day. And so it is really by our networking with experts in the field and really letting their skills come to the table that allows us to go to market.
That was Oresti Fieschi and Jim Iacopone of Amyris. Every fall on rural roads in Louisiana, it's common to see convoys of trucks carrying loads of sugarcane heading to refineries for processing. Many of these loads are eventually transformed into Domino Sugar, a brand that dates back to 1807. Despite its deep roots in traditional granulated sugar, Domino is reaching into the future with a new zero-calorie product. Pure cane is made with the amazing new Amyris molecule, Reb-M. We recently talked with Jim Kappas, Vice President of Special Ingredients at Domino, about this revolutionary new product.
Well, I guess I'd start by saying, at Domino Sugar, we love being part of the New Orleans community. And in fact, we've had our refinery there since 1909. So it's been a big part of our heritage.
Knowing the importance of Domino and sugar and sugar cane, I have to admit, it really turned my head when I learned that Domino is in fact now going to be a player in this new product, Pure Cane.
Well, Domino Foods is a cane sugar company, but we're also a sweetener company. And we try to provide a wide range of sweeteners and specialty sweeteners. For example, organic sugars, specialized molasses, refiner syrups, free-flowing brown sugars. There are probably a lot of types of sweeteners that the average consumer doesn't think of when they think of our company. Sugarcane Reb-M is one more example, and in particular how we can help meet the emerging needs for zero-calorie sweetener. In our minds, it's a logical extension to not only cane sugar, but all of the specialty sweeteners that we have in our portfolio.
How did this come to your attention? I mean, this marriage must have been quite something in the making, joining forces with Amyris.
It is, Bobby. We have invested pretty heavily in an innovation center that's located here nearby in Boca Raton, Florida. And the whole purpose of that center is to listen for and seek out new opportunities that that help us grow and diversify. And we've actually evaluated many different types of sweeteners and new products that we think would be interesting to add to our portfolio. But I believe that Amyris came to us and proposed the partnership a few years ago, and we then began working with their R&D as well as their executive team. And I was a lucky one to help sort of close the deal and get the thing, the project commercially launched this past year.
Is Domino the exclusive partner in this phase of that project?
We are for the North American market. That's right.
What are some of the ways that people can be looking for Purecane?
On a food or beverage, it will appear as Sugarcane Reb M. That is what I would call an ingredient name or on the ingredient declaration statement. And that is how you should look for it on the shelf in foods and beverages. At this stage, I would say we can't reveal specific customers that are working with the product because it's proprietary to their businesses. But as they become available in the market, that is really how consumers can find products that contain the sugarcane Reb M.
So, Jim, will this product be able to be found under Domino Sugar?
Well, actually, Poppy, we're going to be marketing under the Domino Foods Incorporated business-to-business arm and selling sugarcane Reb M as an ingredient to food and beverage companies.
Well, I'm reading the labels. I'm looking. So thank you so much, Jim, for taking the time to talk with us today. And best of wishes to all our friends at Domino who are helping bring this incredible new product into the mainstream. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
That was Jim Kappas, Vice President of Special Ingredients for Domino Foods. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Mark your calendars. On Saturday, November 23rd, I'll be hosting a Poppy's Pop-Up Drag Brunch benefiting Southern Rep Theater. All the delicious fun will take place in the beautiful sanctuary of Southern Rep on Bayou Road. Tickets are available on Eventbrite, and you can get more information by visiting poppytooker.com or calling the theater at 504-522-6545. See what else we're up to by checking out our calendar listings on poppytooker.com, where you can catch up on previous editions, find videos, recipes, and even order cookbooks. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from Camellia Brand Beans and St. Tammany Tourist Commission. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the latest of the Dickie Brennan and Company family of restaurants, Acorn, now open in City Park. Located at the Louisiana Children's Museum, Acorn is open Tuesday through Sunday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Coffee, breakfast, lunch, and snacks served up with some of the best views in the city. Museum admission not required. Original theme music composed by David Pomerleau and performed by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to senior producer Joe Schreiner and Special Projects Manager, Reggie Morris, and to our Business Manager and Social Media Maven, Maddie Mulladew. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. We're on Instagram and Facebook, too. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.